Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome to...
Welcome in, guys.
Welcome, welcome to the Dark Room. You put our names on there, right? Yeah. Okay. Cool. Welcome, everybody, to the show. It's been a very long week. I'm going to make a post about it to my Instagram about getting people to join. Let's see. If I can get the link up, share link.
Well, he does that. So today, Sage is going to be talking to us a little bit about Uzumaki, I believe. I don't know a whole lot about the topic, so I will be doing a lot of listening and learning myself. I will chime in a little bit just to maybe ask some questions myself, but he will be taking it away for the start of the show, however long it takes. He says he has a lot of information to cover with us.
Yes,
so.
I do. All right. Okay, should be up now. All right. So today we're talking about Uzumaki. Uzumaki was written in... Hold on, let me pull up all the notes I wrote about this.
So what is Uzumaki?
Uzumaki is a horror manga written by Junji Ito in 1998. So in 1998, he started writing Uzumaki, and it would subsequently be published every week in a Japanese comic called Big Spirits Weekly. And he didn't do it by chapter, because there's only 20 chapters in the book. He did it like by however much he would get done in a certain period of time, he would just send that out. So it took him... about a year and a half to finish it from... Not even that. Less than a year, I think. Because he... No, let me see. Yeah, you know, okay. A year and a half. My notes here say, from January 1998 to August 1999. And in the... during that time, he would update in Big Spirits Weekly, bits and pieces of the story, and it was incredibly popular. It garnered widespread Japanese attention. People loved it in Japan. It was huge. So, what is it exactly? It is a horror story about spirals. So, a little backstory as to why he picked spirals. In Japanese cartoons, they would put spiral shapes on characters' cheeks to portray happiness or silliness, goofiness, right?
Right.
And spirals were kind of associated at the time with, you know, being a good shape, a happy shape. You'd put spirals up to, like, you know, to put some art on your piece, you know? But Junji Ito saw the spiral as something scarier. He saw it as a, he saw it as a black hole-esque figure. You start at the end of the spiral, and you follow your eyes all the way to the middle, and you could get lost in the trance of the spiral. So he started writing this story. And it follows a girl named Kirie Goshima. Kirie Goshima lives in the town of Kurozucho. Kurozucho is a town that is pretty normal. It's by the sea. It, you know, has shops, a school, a hospital. It has all this, you know, there's nothing at first glance weird about this town. But as the book opens, something weird happens almost instantly. Kirie is walking to pick up or to meet her boyfriend, Shuichi. I think is his name, right? Let me check. Shuichi. Yeah, Shuichi. And they're going, and a twister appears, a small, almost like a dust devil, but it was made of wind, flies past her And that's the first of many spirals we see throughout the story. And she meets, as she's walking to meet up with her boyfriend, she sees a man sitting, staring at a wall. And she goes up to the man and asks what's wrong, and he doesn't respond. And he's staring at the wall. He's staring at the shell of a snail. And it's just, and as you know, it's a spiral shell. And so as this man looks at it, he's salivating. He looks, he's entranced by this spiral, and she can't get him to move. So whatever, she keeps walking. But she did note that that was her boyfriend's dad. And that's a very, you know, obviously a weird thing. And so she meets Shuichi, and she brings it up to Shuichi, and Shuichi says, oh, that's my dad. Yeah, that was my dad, and my dad has been acting weird recently. He's been obsessed with spirals, and there's been things like they have miso soup with spiral fish cakes in it. But the thing is, they run out of spiral fish cakes, and so he refuses to eat the soup, and he yells at his wife because there's no spiral fish cakes. And the only way he can consume the soup is by taking the chopsticks and spinning it in a circle to make a spiral whirlpool in the soup. So he's absolutely obsessed. It's taking him over. And
so is he, like, what is he, like, possessed?
That's what this story never really fully tells you, what the spiral has over the grasp of this town. So basically, this story is split into kind of an anthology in the beginning. The story has chapters that don't really cross over. They just are their own little stories from the perspective of Kyrie. But it isn't until the final couple chapters that it all comes together. And so you deal with all sorts of random things, like people turning into human slugs, women that are that attract boys unnaturally and turn into spirals themselves. Pregnant women that are human mosquitoes, babies going, babies wishing to return to the womb. Terrible, scary things happen in this story, but they're all weird. That's kind of where the horror lies. Is it's not traditional horror in the fact that of not just because it's unknown, but because it's unexplainable to anybody. As to why it's scary. If I said a person turns into a slug, you wouldn't really, like, find that terrifying.
Unsettling, not terrifying.
You'd be like, oh, that's a little bit weird.
Yeah.
That's a little bit unsettling, but, you know, whatever. But it's made terrifying. It's made
so
horrifying.
Hold on. This all follows one character. Like,
one
there's
character.
A protagonist.
There's a protagonist. Kiryu
okay,
Kishima.
So, because there's another, like, anime story. It's, kind of reminds me of what you're talking about, Junji Ito Maniac, Japanese Tales of the Macabre.
Yeah. So that Junji Ito, who made Uzumaki, he's known for making short stories. He normally doesn't make full books.
Right.
He's made 3 full books, and then he's made like 20 short story collections. I have 2 of his short story collections, but I have his 3 main books, Gyo, Tomi, and Uzumaki. I'll probably talk about Tomi next week, briefly, because it's the one I'm reading, and I don't want to do a whole episode on Tomi, even though I like Tomi. But when it comes to Uzumaki, there is something so special about how he deals with horror. He doesn't rely on anything cheap. It's all unique. It's all creative. It's nothing you've ever seen before. And it's weird. And it's unapologetically weird. So basically, Shuichi tells Kyrie that his father is obsessed with spirals and the thing with the fish cakes and all that. And that it's getting worse. It's getting way worse. And one day, a package arrives at the Shuichi household, and the father accepts it. He's very excited. and they don't see him for hours, and they kind of can't find him around the house. So they keep looking, and then they find this wooden tub, like a wooden bathtub, that was bought, and they open it up, and inside, spiraled up, his bones have been broken, his body has been malformed to make a human spiral within the tub. And that's where the first chapter ends. So already you know that this is going to – that's the least weird thing that's going to happen in the whole story. People are going to turn into human slugs, and people are going to turn into spirals, and people are going to turn into snakes, and all sorts of weird things are just going to happen. And it gets it progresses naturally, though. It gets weirder and weirder. It doesn't start one weird. It doesn't end one weird. It just it's a gradual building of the weirdness, of the scariness of the story. So they Uzumaki was huge. It was very huge. And I'm sure people have seen that image of the girl with the spiral in her face and her eyeballs falling out. That's like iconic. But not a lot of people have read it. You can pick it up for like $35 at Barnes and Noble, which I recommend people do. But the book continues with them burning, cremating his father's body. And when Shuichi's father is cremated, the smoke in the sky forms a spiral. And the smoke swirls and goes all the way down into the Dragonfly Pond, which is a pond right in the middle of town. And it spirals into the pond, and that's it. It just – that happens, and everybody moves on. People find it weird. But here's an interesting point that I should point out. Throughout the whole story, Kirie doesn't really grow much as a character. She just kind of is always weirded out by things, but she doesn't ever – she doesn't ever think back to her past weird experiences and goes, huh, something's wrong with this town. Nor does anybody else in the town. Everybody in the town sees these really weird things happen, like people, you know, turn into spiral smoke and go into a pond, and they treat it like, that was weird. Anyways, let's go back to work. Nobody notices, or they at least fail to notice, that something wrong is going on, except Shuichi. Shuichi wants to run away from the town. He every day he goes out of town to a special school that he's going to, so he knows he isn't under the effects of the town. He knows something is wrong, but Kirie doesn't want to leave. She doesn't know why she doesn't want to leave. She just doesn't want to leave, and that could also be an effect of the town. Kurosucho seems to have this this possession-like thing where it makes the people inside not want to leave. They want to stay there forever, and slowly each person will become consumed by the spiral. So I'm gonna talk about a couple of the the anthology chapters before going into the ending of the story. But there's a good one is where Kirie, one day, her hair starts having spirals in it, like it's curling up. Kirie obviously finds this very weird, and she doesn't pay much attention to it until all the other girls are giving her attention. Everybody in school is giving Kirie attention, and everybody is telling her how good her hair looks, and people are just staring at her. And this one girl gets very jealous of her. So the Kirie keeps living life with these new spirals in her hair. And she goes to a shop to try and get them cut off. But the hair fights back and stops them from cutting the hair off. And so she goes home. And every day she wakes up, that her hair is getting larger and larger. And the spirals are floating up to the sky. And they're getting bigger and bigger. And the other girl is so jealous, and one day she appears to school with the same thing. Large hair floating up towards the sky, spirals in the hair, and the hair is basically controlling them. It's telling them where to go. It wants people to look at the hair. It wants people to look at it. So Kirie and this girl get into a massive fight, and their hairs are being intertwined and basically forming into one giant spiral mass. When Shuichi shows up with a pair of scissors, and he's running at it, and he's trying to cut the hair off, and it's attacking back, and it finally encases Shuichi in like a cocoon, but Shuichi still has the scissors and cuts himself out and gets to Kirie and cuts her hair very short. And a really cool bit of detail is throughout the rest of the manga, Kirie's hair is always short. She keeps it short. Like, it doesn't ever grow back. It's weird. It's definitely weird. But that's the end of one story. The other girl doesn't get her hair cut off and wraps itself around a telephone pole, and she rots away. And she becomes another victim of the spiral. Another good one is when this kid who's very slow, not like mentally, like he's like slow physically, like he just takes a long time to do anything, comes to school one day slimy and wet, and he has a bump on his back. It's a very weird bump. It's a spiral-shaped bump. And every day he comes to school, the bump gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Until one day it's so big he can't walk, and he slithers into class. And then slowly the bump breaks through his shirt and reveals that it's actually a shell. And the kid slowly starts to turn into a slug. And the slug slithers around the school, freaks everybody out. But the parents of the kid refuse to take him home because that's not their son. They refuse to believe it's their son. Again, another effect of the spiral is, the effect of the town is not like no common sense. So the school builds a pen, and they put the slug in the pen, and they have kids feed it and whatnot. And it just lives there. The kid that turned into a slug just lives there. But earlier in the story, a kid was bullying him. And the bully starts to have a bump on his back as well. And over time, the same thing happens, and he turns into a slug. And because of this, they put him also in the pen with the other slug. And then a kid points out that slugs are hermaphrodites. And so both slugs start mating. And they run away into the forest and lay eggs. And the kids find the eggs, they smash the eggs, but nobody finds the slugs again. And that's the end of that story. So again, really, really weird and creepy. And it's paired perfectly with the visuals from the manga. It's just really well done. And I think that's what Junji Ito is always good at, is taking a weird concept and making it utterly horrifying, just making it almost like disturbing. You don't want to look at it, but your curiosity gets the better of you. There is a, what was it called? Maniac?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Maniac.
It's the Tales of the Macabre.
Yeah, that's the show, right?
It is. It's on Netflix,
it's
actually.
It's on Netflix, yeah. And it's like his art style that they perfectly encapsulated his art style and put it on screen. Like, it was like, I've only seen like a couple episodes, but it's absolutely amazing.
It's good.
I like it. From what I've seen, it's absolutely amazing.
I finished it, and from what I saw, I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
His stories don't really, there's not really a plot. They're all different stories. There's not a main protagonist. It's just meant to creep you out.
And that's what he does best. I mean, he's a short story writer. He writes short stories mostly. He never really he never really writes a long story. That's why he's only done three of them. So, and he's done so many short stories. But he's also done a couple adaptations. Junji Ito adapted the Japanese book No Longer Human. He also adapted the classic horror story Frankenstein. Junji Ito's Frankenstein is really, really good. It might be one of his best works, in my opinion, is the Frankenstein adaptation. So I would recommend checking that out. But on top of besides that, what else can I say about Uzumaki? I don't really want to spoil the ending in case, because I know there's a couple of people I have listening right now, and I know I want them to read it. But what I will say is in 2000, about a couple months after the publication ended, they made a movie. Well, they released a movie. The movie had been filming the year prior before the book was finished being published. So they had to come up with their own ending. But they did make a movie, and it came out in 2000. It's just called Uzumaki. And I watched it not once, not twice, but three times, back to back. And I wrote notes because I was bored, and I thought that would have been fun. And it was very fun to do so. Basically, what it does is it takes the first 10 chapters of the book, condenses them into an hour and a half, and makes up a new ending. And that's it. It just goes, yep, that's the story. So the movie opens just like the book opens, with Kyrie walking down a path. Twister comes by, but it's kind of shot weird in the film. If I can pull it up here, Uzumaki movie comparison. The same thing happens. She sees Shuichi's father. She meets Shuichi. Shuichi's father is obsessed. All that. He dies the same way. But there's a couple Easter eggs here and there. Like, there's a wanted poster with Junji Ito's face on it. But the movie was directed by Higuchinsky. Higuchinsky is a Ukrainian-born Japanese film director. And Higuchinsky has directed three films in his lifetime. Two of them are Junji Ito adaptations. He directed the Uzumaki adaptation, and he directed Long Dream or Long Sleep. I think. Let me check. Let me do a quick Higuchinsky. Let's see right here. Movies. Long Dream. Yes, Long Dream. He directed Long Dream and Uzumaki. Both came out in 2000. Long Dream, I have not read that book yet, nor have I watched the movie. The movie is only 58 minutes long. So, and also Long Dream is a short story. So, I mean, it's possibly good, but I'll have to get back on that one. But Higuchinsky wanted to be as faithful as possible when making this movie. Granted, it's not the most faithful adaptation I've ever seen. It takes some liberties, but by and large, it is pretty much, it's by and large, like, he recreates shots from the manga straight up. The opening shot of Kyrie looking over the town, same exact shot as the opening panel of the manga. When Shuichi's father is looking at the snail shell, same shot. There's a specific scene where Shuichi's father is sitting in a room and he's surrounded by spirals and he's staring at a metal spiral in his hand. Same exact shot. Girl walking down the hallway with the large hair and the spirals in the hair. Same exact shot. So there was a lot of love that Higuchinsky put, because he was a fan of Junji Ito's work. I mean, he made two films based off him, after all. So, I thought that it was amazing, and I'll show that right now to you, so you can get an idea of what it looked like. But I gotta wait for these stupid ads to play. Okay, so Uzumaki opens like this. See, so the twister comes by. That's what it looks like in the manga, and then in this one, you see it from the twister's perspective, and it's just wind, but it's still pretty faithful. Like this one, when he's looking at the snail shell. Again, incredibly faithful. You can see here, she's leaning over his shoulder in the shot. Same thing in the movie. It's just, It's amazing that an anime or manga adaptation that's live action is that good, but it is that good. The spiral smoke in the sky looks amazing. The face in the clouds, it going to Dragonfly Pond. This one with the hair in the hair. See, it's the same. It looks amazing. Just looks absolutely amazing. But that's not the only adaptation of Uzumaki. Adult Swim is currently financing a television miniseries of Uzumaki. It was announced 4 years ago, got an update 2 years ago, and 8 months ago, we got our first look at it. Still not out, but it will be soon.
I'm assuming that's going to be for Toonami.
Yeah, Toonami. As you can see, it looks just like the manga. It almost to a T looks like the manga. There's the spirals in the rivers in the town. And the, like, again, here is Shuichi's father, staring at a metal spiral surrounded by spirals. And then if I go to Uzumaki movie, Shuichi's father, images. So here's what it looks like in the manga. I wonder if it'll show me. Right here. See, you can see side by side, like, it's pretty faithful. Same pose, same look. He's, you know, surrounded by just spirals. And I think, yeah. So if people want to check out Uzumaki, I'd recommend going to Barnes & Noble. Going to the manga section and picking it up, $35. Absolutely just amazing. I actually, surprisingly, even though I've been talking it up, not my favorite Junji Ito book. So far, that would be Tomy. I think I really like Tomy. Tomy has like 10 movies, and it's like a movie franchise in Japan. And is now like kind of subsequently an urban legend in Japan. But Tomy's pretty good. It's about like a girl who is incredibly beautiful and dies one day, and then she just comes to school the next day, and everybody's freaking out as to like, you died. And that one, the way she died is, I can't say that on air, but it's bad. So Tomy is good. Gyo, I bought Gyo. I haven't read it yet. I gotta finish Tomy, but I own them all, so I'm gonna sit down. I'll probably sit down tonight and read them all and put the movies on, because I need to do something tonight. But let me see. What else can I say about Uzumaki? Uzumaki is iconic. It is scary. It's funny. It's weird. And it's unapologetically Junji Ito. And that is why I think, even if it's not his best work, it will always be his most famous and most iconic, because it was the first of his works. It was one of the first of his works. And it not only was incredible, but it was unique. And that's just, that's Uzumaki. Took about half of the show to talk about it. So, yeah, I guess I'll turn it over to you if you've got something.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do a little song break before we go into it.
What do we got? You got any songs?
Yeah, I do. Give me a second.
Okay.
I could pull some up. This is a small little playlist I have for the show, so feel free to pick something from there.
Okay. Let's see. I got one.
Go for it. All right. Little song break, and we'll be back.
We'll be back in just a minute with more stuff. All right. Bye.
an altar wrought with mystery of Tom the poet and his muse, and a magic lake which gave a life to the words the poet used. Now the muse she was his happiness, and he rhymed about her grace, and told the stories of treasures deep beneath the blackened waves. Stillness of one dance, still in its misty crown, the muse she went down to the lake, and in the waves she drowned. And now to see your love set free, you will need the witch's cabin key. Find the lady of the light, gone mad with the night. That's how you reshape destiny. To the lake to call out to his dear. When there was no answer, he was overcome with fear. He searched in vain for his treasure lost, and too soon the night would fall, and only his own echo would wail back at his call. And when he swore to bring back his love by stories he'd create, nightmares shifted in their sleep in the darkness of the lake. And now to see your love set free, you will need the witch's cabin key. Find the lady of the light still raving in the night. That's how you reshape destiny. She came to him with darkness in her eyes. We're in a morning gown, sweet words as her disguise. He took her in without a word, for he saw his grave mistake, and vowed them both to silence deep beneath the lake. Now if it's real or just a dream, one mystery remains, for it is said on moonless nights they may still haunt this place. That's how you reshape destiny.
At Ross, the spring deals are
Hey, everybody. We're back.
Okay. Welcome back. So, we've just finished talking a little bit about Uzumaki.
And
to kind of go into it, you know, Junji Ito, never really heard of him, but I am, I guess, a bit familiar with his work because of the Tales of the Macabre series. When I first stumbled upon this series, I found it on Netflix. I thought it was going to be just a series about animated urban legends, the, you know, like Japanese urban legends or something like that. And I safe to say that I was extremely wrong. His stories, they're all short stories. They're all different. There's no plot. There's no main character. Every episode is a different story. And with these, you know, you can go from some really twisted ones to some that aren't as bad.
Yeah.
One of the ones that I know the most is probably the ones with the floating heads, where you know, this girl, she kind of ends up finding, it's hardest to tell how it starts, but there's this girl that was very popular, and it looks like she hung herself. Mm-hmm. People think that it was because of the boy that she was with, and so later on, the protagonist of this episode finds the boy, and this head, this like the girl's head is floating, and it comes by and it takes the boy and it hangs him as well. And so it's actually, it doesn't hang him. The boy's head appears with her and it hangs him. So it's this thing where these creatures, they're these floating heads that look like your head, like your family's, you know, your dad, your mom's head. They come by and they try to hang the person who they resemble. It's extremely weird and creepy, because at the end, everybody gets taken by one of the heads except for the main girl. But, you know, her family gets taken. So it's a lot of stories like that. At first, I thought I was going to see some urban legends. I'm a big fan of urban legends and creepy stories. And while we're in the topic of, you know, Japan and some of these Japanese stories, there's quite a few really messed up stories, such as Teke Teke, which I want to talk a little bit about. So this is a legend, or an urban legend about a girl who met her demise due to an unfortunate prank about a cicada. She fell on the railroad tracks, and she was not really a good way to Disney this up, but she was sliced in half by the train. So now she became a vengeful spirit, and this spirit goes around and essentially drags itself, finding victims, finding people. And while the spirit drags itself around, you hear that a noise that resembles a teke teke sound. Some people say it's from her elbows hitting the ground. Others say it's just from the spirit itself dragging itself around the floor. And what this spirit does is it will find you. And when it finds you, even though it's not very fast, it's going to chase you, and it will not give up until it finally catches you and essentially does to you what was done to it. So there's a lot of stories like that. I know one other story that's very popular is that of the sliced mouth woman. So her name is Kuchisake Ona.
I've heard of Kuchisake Ona. Yeah.
There's not a lot. It's a very complicated story, because I know there's a way that you can technically survive this spirit if you encounter it. But I can't remember, because the spirit will come up to you, and it's a woman who is wearing a surgical mask, and she will ask you if you think, you know, she's beautiful. If you say yes, she will take off the mask and reveal her grotesquely cut mouth. And she will then ask you the question again, do you think I'm beautiful? No matter how you answer, she will kill you. Because if you say yes, she will attack you for lying. If you say no, or if you scream in fear, she's going to do the same thing that happened to her. She's going to do it to you. She's going to attack you with either a pair of scissors or a knife. There's supposed to be a way where you can escape her. I think it's if she thinks that you are beautiful or something like that, and it will throw her off for a couple minutes and give you enough time for you to actually run away. So it's a really interesting story, and it's popular. A lot of people know that one. And, you know, there's a lot of variations to that specific story as to, you know, how she ended up that way, how she became a vengeful spirit. Some people say that it was her husband, her jealous husband, that did that to her before she passed. Some people say that her injuries were obtained from that of another vengeful and angry spirit. Obviously, she became one herself, so that story is, you know, pretty, most of these stories are pretty sad. They're pretty interesting. They talk about spirits. For example, one that's a lovely lady who, in fact, turns into a spider and devours you. So, man, when it comes to Japan, I mean, even some of these creators, they really have a lot. A lot of imagination, and very twisted, if I may say so, which is definitely interesting. I mean, just looking at Japanese culture, you're looking at all of these different beliefs. They believe a lot on, what is it? Like demons, right? They have a name for them. Do you know what it is?
Yokai.
And so I know that different parts of Japan actually have a bunch of different statues you can visit, and each statue is a different yokai.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of shows that kind of go based off on that. So,
I mean, the obvious one is Yokai Watch. I mean,
I'm not familiar with Yokai Watch.
You don't know Yo-Kai Watch?
No, I feel like I recognize the name, but I'm not familiar with it.
Yo-Kai Watch takes actual yokai, like Japanese yokai that exist in legend, and turns them into Pokemon. That's what it is. It's really? Just it's for kids. Yo-Kai Watch is for kids, and it's like, oh, you can like all these yokai exist, and they all do wacky things, and like. Yeah, each one is, like, unique, and there's so many of them.
Oh, man. Okay, so I do know this. How did they even do that? Because some yokai are... Some yokai are pretty messed up.
They change backstories entirely just to kiddie up a whole bunch, like, to Disney down a whole bunch of these things. But it's literally, like, the actual yokai that exist are there.
That's interesting. That's actually kind of cool. I am familiar with the name, but I've never actually seen this. So it's like a show, right?
Yeah. Interesting. It's like a show. I mean, it's a show. It's a video game series. They've got movies. It's a franchise, really.
I had no idea.
But that's like the obvious one when I think of yokai is Yo-Kai Watch. I mean,
when I talk about yokai, I mean, there's a lot with yokai. I mean, for example, there's one. There's like an anime that's really popular. At least I like it. And it's The Night Parade of 100 Demons.
Oh, yeah. So there's a video game I played called Tokyo Ghostwire. Have you heard of this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that game has a night parade of a thousand demons. It has yokai in it. It has all sorts.
Is it 100 or 1,000?
Let's look it up.
I think it's 1,000. 1,000 demons.
Night parade of 100.
Oh, it's 100 demons.
Of 100 demons. Hiaki Yagyo. The night parade of 100 demons. A field guide to Japanese yokai. So it's... It says here that also transliterated Hiaki Yako is an idiom in Japanese folklore, sometimes an orderly procession, other times a riot. It refers to a parade of thousands of supernatural creatures known as Oni and Yokai that march through the streets of Japan at night. As a terrifying eruption of the supernatural into the real world, it is similar, though not precisely equivalent, to the concept of pandemonium in English. And it says here that over more than 1,000 years of history and its role as a popular theme in traditional storytelling and art, a great deal of folklore has developed around the concept, making it difficult, if not impossible, to isolate any canonical meanings. So, yeah, that's basically it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, so, it's sick.
They mess a lot. Not even mess, because this is actually part of the culture. So they talk a lot about like different types of demons and curses, which is awesome.
Oh, and that's like that's why people say like the Japanese are so good at horror.
They are,
because they literally like they have like scary things written into their history.
They do. They have
and
a lot.
It's like they do it just so well. I mean, I love all sorts of Japanese horror. Obscure Japanese horror films are like my vibe. If I had to pick a genre of film, I would pick obscure Japanese horror films. That's like my favorite genre of film because they're so much fun.
There's
like,
even games. And I'm not talking about video games. I'm talking about actual games where you technically go and you summon some sort of spirit. Like, there's the bathtub game where you try to summon a spirit of a girl who died and, like, drowned in a bathtub. I think she, like, fell, hit her head. And you summon her. And apparently when you go through the game, you feel like there's a presence behind you. And that's when you get out of the shower.
Yeah.
And this spirit will keep following you every day. It's like a game of tag almost.
Yeah.
There's a phrase that you say to keep it at bay when it's getting too close. But eventually it will catch up to you.
Yeah.
You have to survive for, like, a certain number of time.
Yeah, that's what they excel at, really. So there's an anime that I recommend everybody watch. It's more creepy than it is scary, but like I still think it fits the vibe. It's called Mushishi. Have you heard of this?
I've seen it.
You've seen it? That show is there's that episode where like the girl, or I think it's a guy, I don't remember what their gender is, but they can't see light, like sun can't, if they see it or it touches them, it like hurts them. And there's the one where I think it might be the same episode where if you close your second eye, you like see the river of light. It's like it's so cool. That show, like I started rewatching that recently, and it was just it's creepy. It's like it does the one with the demon horns where the people have the demon horns on their head, and then there's the one where the guy is always chasing a rainbow that he can never actually reach because he's the only one that can see it.
Yep.
Like, it's like the Twilight Zone, but Japanese. It's cool. I like it.
they go ham with this stuff. So.
They do. They absolutely do. I love this art for the Night Parade. Like, this is absolutely...
The Night Parade, yeah.
Yeah, this is crazy, but it's cool.
Because there's all types of yokai. And, like, yokai and demons is the same thing. But it's also inspired so much. I mean, like you said, there's that anime. There's a bunch. I mean, like, Blue Exorcist, Jujutsu Kaisen. They're kind of influenced by stuff like
that. Well, when I look up Night Parade of 100 Demons, the Jujutsu Kaisen wiki shows up because of... I don't know if you've... Go watch Jujutsu Kaisen Zero. There you go. Isn't that Jujutsu Kaisen Zero is when the Night Parade...
That's happened. The movie. Yeah, it's the That's movie. When he declares that he's about to bring the Night Parade of 1,000 yeah. or 100 Demons to... That's yeah. when they have to go and take care of that, and then...
Yeah. Yeah, I love Jujutsu Kaisen Zero. That, like, I saw that in theaters, and that was
amazing. That movie's great.
Yeah, it's great.
That movie is absolutely phenomenal.
I love that stuff.
That's because you get to meet Yuta, which is Yuta's such a good character, in my opinion.
Yeah, Yuta's my favorite character in Jujutsu Kaisen. So, but there's a movie called No Roy the Curse. It's a 2005 found footage Japanese horror film.
I've never seen this.
This movie isn't terribly scary, but it is really interesting. So you follow a character named Masafumi Kobayashi, and he's like a ghost detective. He's like a ghost hunter, but he's more detective, and he is investigating a case of just creepy things start happening, and the movie is really good. I don't know if you know who Dead Meat is. Do you know Dead Meat?
Nope.
Do you know the kill counts?
Yep.
Yeah, the Dead Meat makes the kill counts on YouTube, right? Okay. They have a podcast called the Dead Meat Podcast. They covered No Roy, and that's not how I discovered it. I discovered it way before that, but that's a really good video if you want to watch the movie and then listen to the podcast. Like, it's really good. But there's a guy that's covered in tinfoil the whole movie, and he screams for half of the film. Like, most of his lines are him screaming about ghosts. But it's good. It's all about, here's a bit of the plot. Masafumi Kobayashi is a paranormal researcher who's produced a series of books and documentaries on supernatural activity around Japan. During the production of a documentary titled The Curse, Kobayashi disappeared after his house burnt down and his wife Keiko was found dead in the ruins. The aforementioned documentary begins to play, shown mostly through the recordings of Kobayashi's cameraman, Miyajima. So that's the setup for the film. And, like, if you have the hankering to watch a film that's scary, next time, watch this one. No Roy the Curse. N-O-R-O-I, The Curse. It's a Koji Shiraishi film. Koji Shiraishi is known for doing found footage stuff like Portrait of a Sweet Murder, I think is what it's called. Which is a Record of Sweet Murder. That's what it's called. Which is a 2014 Korean-Japanese joint film about a murderer. And then he did Sadako versus Kayako, which we talked about. He did a movie called Carved, the Slit Mouth Woman.
Okay, there you go.
So, a Japanese horror film directed by Koji Shiraishi based on the urban legend known as Kuchisaki Ona. So he made that. He also did a movie called Occult, which is really good. It's in the same vein as No Roy the Curse. I watched both No Roy and Occult back to back, and it was great. Like, it was amazing. Occult is about a guy who survives a stabbing, like a mass stabbing, and he believes that he's like been called, he survived to be called by like a god, and it's like his descent into madness. It's really cool. Nice. He made a movie called Teki Teki. Koji Shiraishi did.
It's probably about that urban legend. Yeah. I think about it, Teki Teki.
Yeah, so he made a slit mouth, a Kuchisaki Ona movie, and a Teki Teki movie. And he made a sequel called Teki Teki 2. What else? He did Cult, which in Japan is called Karuto. Cult is pretty good. It's another found footage one. He did, obviously, Sadako vs. Kayako, Hell Girl. A lot of movies. But, I think, you know what I think I'm doing tonight? Tonight, I'm going to finish Tomie. I'm going to watch one of like the 10 Tomy movies, and then I'm going to watch the Kuchisaki Ona film and the Teki Teki film, and then I will bring them back next week and we'll talk about it. But yeah, I absolutely love Japanese horror. It's just so good.
It is. I don't think anything can really beat it.
Yeah, and we talked about this on an earlier episode, but, you know, Ju-on is my favorite horror franchise, and that's, you know, pure Japanese, like, ghosts. You know, ghosts are really Japanese horror. Mm-hmm. A lot of horror that you don't see a lot of ghost movies anymore, but Japan still makes them, and ghost movies, like, they do ghosts perfectly. I think that ghosts are just, you know... ghosts can have they can be scary, but when I think of ghosts, I think of a guy in a white sheet with cut out eyes, you know? It's just silly. It's not really scary. And ghosts just aren't in the mainstream media like zombies or vampires or
people. When it comes to a lot of those movies, a lot of people just go for demons, demonic.
Yeah, they never do ghosts.
When you see demons. Stuff like Paranormal Activity, even that I feel like has to do with more like demonic than anything else.
Paranormal Activity, he's not being hunted by a ghost. He's being hunted by a demon, right?
Right. But even then, even if you were to call it a ghost, the difference is with a lot of ghost stuff like that, you don't even see the ghost. You don't even see the spirit. And so maybe at the end, but at the end, you see some weird stuff, but not necessarily anything. Japanese horror gives the ghosts a physical body, in a sense. Something you can actually see and be scared of. Something you can see and be disturbed by.
Yeah. I mean, really, it is... It really is fun to...
Yep. But so today, I mean, we mainly wanted to talk today about the book that you were reading. So next week, we have our last show. That's it.
And so, I'm going to bring the stuff I talked about today, and then we'll do a little wrap-up, I think. And
basically
we'll just
talk a little bit about it. I mean, it's been fun. You know, I feel like we've covered a lot. There's a lot more that we could have covered. I mean, when it comes to the topic
if we could do another one, you know.
So the horror is just really broad. There's a lot. So I've had a lot of fun with it. I know next week we'll kind of talk a little bit about it. I'm down to watch the Teki Teki movie.
Yeah.
And we can, you know, talk about it, you know, see what we think, and we'll wrap up for our last show.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week for our last show. Thank you for joining us. And we can do maybe a little bit of music to do like an outro.
Yeah, sure.
Technically a couple minutes. So.
Let's hit that our intro song again as an outro.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's see here.
The Ju-on theme.
All right, all right.
All right, guys.
Bye.